You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey guys, Lauren jumping in before the episode to remind you that we have two remaining dates on our West Coast tour. We will be playing the Bourbon Room on June 28th and June 29th. This may or may not be our last date on our North American tour, so I would come see us. All right, hope to see you there and please enjoy the episode.
I spent $40,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
No, it hasn't.
I've been thinking, our pathetic relationship is as close to marriage as either one of us ever hopes to get. So I'm entitled to some sort of settlement. Say, a weekend at your house in the Hamptons? You're not invited. I'll be having a party. You're not invited to that either. Oh, it's Samantha. Call me. This is your sign to cover season 5. I love a charade. Bye.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to another episode of the Every Outfit Podcast. Today we will be talking about I Love Charade.
Isn't it I Love a Charade?
Oh, no.
It's just I Love Charade?
No, you are correct. I'm wrong. I've been calling it I Love Charade for 20 years.
Wow, this must be a big aha moment for you.
Anyway, that revelation came about because I was just trying to discuss that amazing caller who requested this episode.
Yes, we couldn't ignore fake Samantha's pleas to cover this episode.
Can I just say, when I was listening to this voicemail, because I was going through it for our hotline episode, I was like, what is happening right now?
This episode begins with the introduction of Bobby Fine, satellite friend, piano bar legend.
I'm going to start incorporating, instead of saying an acquaintance, just start saying a satellite friend. I used to deem this a New York friend, more than an acquaintance, less than a friend, but I like satellite friend much better.
Yeah, it's a good one. Of course, Bobby is played by the brilliant Nathan Lane, aka SJP's husband's co-star in The Producers, which had premiered on Broadway the year before this episode came out. So this is peak Producers era.
Envision peak Hamilton mania, and it was that, but 20 years before for The Producers.
As I recall, Nathan Lane was kind of newly out in this era. I think he came out after Matthew Shepard got murdered, quite tragically.
Interesting. Yeah, it's been going around on the internet, the clip of Robin Williams sort of protecting him on Oprah when they were promoting The Birdcage, where Oprah was like, basically like, are you gay? And Robin Williams just improv to like get her off of the question.
No, she didn't say, are you gay? She basically was like, you were like a little too good at doing all of those effeminate mannerisms. Like, aren't you afraid of being typecast?
Oh.
As I recall, I remember watching that episode. But yes, during the era of The Birdcage, Nathan Lane was not out. But in the Sex and the City Producers era, out.
And this episode, particularly cheeky for his persona, known and unknown.
Yeah, so we assume that Bobby Fine is gay because he's playing the piano and he says, I usually do this number at home in a pink caftan and a Peggy Lee wig.
I mean, what are you talking about? That's the straightest statement anyone could say.
What is this fancy Uptown Joe's Pub and when can we go?
It's more than Joe's Pub, but less than a Bellman's.
Yeah.
Very much needed, I would say. So he calls out Carrie Bradshaw and says that she writes books. You remember books, primitive versions of the DVD. Wow, what a moment in time we're in. If you didn't know, we were in the year 2002.
And Carrie has come to Bobby's show with the whole crew. all the girls.
Yeah, even Miranda was able to get Magda to watch the kid.
And after the show, Bobby comes over to talk to them. It's established that him and Carrie are old New York friends or old New York acquaintances. And they've known each other since Cats was just kittens. And that reminded me, wait, wasn't there a Cats reference on the last Sex in the City episode that we discussed when Stanford said he hadn't had sex since before Cats was on Broadway?
I think so.
So how many Cats references are there actually on Sex in the City? Is this it or are there more? I guess we'll find out.
Are we including Cats' Delicatessen in this as well?
Tragically, Cats' Delicatessen never made an appearance on Sex in the City despite Charlotte's Judaism plotline.
Let's be honest, she'll never go below 14th Street. Which, speaking of Charlotte's, Kristen Davis's choice to act very confused when Bobby Fine mentions Cats, and then he's like, it's a musical, hello? And she's like, no, I get it. It's like, what is that about?
She loves Cats, though. Have you ever seen Cats?
Absolutely not. I wouldn't even watch the movie version.
Okay, that I get, but it's just kind of weird that you didn't see Cats, like, as a child. You know, at the height of its popularity.
Oh, you mean my mother, who also hates musicals, you're surprised, didn't bring me to see Cats?
I saw Cats as a child. I saw Cats maybe 10 years ago in New York. It briefly came back on Broadway. And then I saw the Cats film during the pandemic, which actually, maybe you should just see that.
You know, maybe a special VIP episode where we do some mushrooms and watch the Cats musical.
So Bitsy Von Muffling arrives, played by Julie London. The first of many Bitsy Von Muffling appearances on this show, more than you would expect.
The fact that she has doubled her appearances in and just like that than in her run in the last two seasons of Sex and the City is puzzling. Do we know what Bitsy Von Muffling does? Because we get from this introduction that Samantha did PR for her museum benefit, but that's about it, right?
She's a rich lady. I think that's all we're supposed to know. And she's still rich because she went to that fundraiser with Gloria Steinem on And Just Like That.
As we learn, Bobby Fine didn't marry Bitsy Von Muffling for her money, as he was one of the original investors in Chorus Line. So I guess...
Oh, Chorus Line. Lauren, what is with you today?
I hate musicals and I hate prepositions is I guess what we're learning. Anyway, that was all to say that Bitsy Von Muffling inherited the Chorus Line investments that Bobby Fine recouped. Okay, so it's established that Bitsy is getting married, to which everyone's like, how exciting, to who? Who's the lucky stud, I believe is the phrasing.
That's horrifying. No one should say stud ever.
And especially, and I'm sorry to be ageist, but not to a woman of a certain age. You know, maybe who's the fella?
Stud is very much like, who's servicing you?
But I guess it is being used for the juxtaposition that then Nathan Lane goes, well, me. And Carrie begins laughing uncontrollably.
As you would. If an openly gay person is suddenly engaged to a woman, you would think that would be a joke that he would make.
And he also uses the phrase, I finally found the right girl, which is an often used phrase of why gay men are not married, is they just haven't found the right girl.
Yes. It's an awkward moment.
Made even more awkward because Bobby Fine leaves the scene by saying Mr. Broadway has to go tinkle.
Look, this is wild, but I have witnessed an approximation of this situation in my own life. So I'm sure that the writers on this show were inspired by something that actually happened to them.
Oh, 110%.
Obviously, bisexuality exists, but also sometimes like a gay person just randomly goes off the deep end.
Bitsy Von Muffling gets into this a little bit more and then just like that as we learn. That they did have a full sex life and a happy companionship and maybe the best marriage of the series below Charlotte and Harry.
Yeah, which is why it's fucked up that this entire episode is basically everyone shitting on them all the time.
Right, which begins with Carrie explaining that they'll never get married because in 1988, Bobby Fine announced that he was going to sell his piano bar downtown and go volunteer with, and I'll say it the way that Carrie does, Nicaraguan orphans. The orphans are still waiting. This wedding will never happen. Just an interesting Sarah Jessica Parker acting choice to say Nicaraguans.
Cut to them looking at the invitation. It's happening. at the diner.
So my question is, why do we think Carrie and company got the invite? Because obviously they are second tier friends. And I'm saying that they're second tier friends and got their invitation late because Samantha's like, well, all the good places are already booked up.
Well, I think that just speaks to the competitive housing market in the Hamptons during the summer.
It really feels like Bobby saw Carrie's shitty comment and was like, guess what? You're coming to this wedding.
So this is the diner scene where Carrie coins the term Zaza Zoo.
I completely forgot that this was the Zaza Zoo episode.
So what actually is Zaza Zoo? As it's described, it's something between chemistry and falling in love.
Right. And the reason that Carrie brings this up is because Miranda is like, I find the love facade of this wedding between Bobby Fine and Bitsy Muffling the most offensive part. Like, just say we need companionship.
Right.
Carrie defines it as the butterflies in your stomach that happens when you not only love the person, but you gotta have them. So it's like somewhere between, I guess, lust and a long-term love interest.
I don't know. I feel like there are worse ideas than marrying a gay man. The love between a fag and a hag is powerful. Like, why not just go with it?
I guess Carrie can't get over the fact of, like, not lusting after the person you're married with, because she's like, well, this is how you get through a long-term partnership, is like, once that feeling fades, you have the memory of the Zaza Zoo. And I'm like, I think that's just you, Carrie. As we learned in Just Like That, Carrie's philosophy is to just jump from one Zaza Zoo to another. Right. So, like, she didn't even let the memory of Big's Zaza Zoo feelings sustain her. She was like, you know what? The last time I felt Zaza Zoo was Aiden, so I'm just going to jump back into that. Miranda also has the great line where she says there's a pink suede elephant in the middle of the room and no one's allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, that was good. I completely forgot that this is the episode where Charlotte confesses that she's seen Harry. I feel so bad for Harry in this moment because she basically introduces her future husband and father of her children as just like a bald and short guy that talks with his mouth full.
Well, don't forget that he's Harry, because he is. On everywhere but his head.
She doesn't want to be seen in public with him. It's like, babes, Evan Handler isn't that much of an ogre. Like, what?
There's the episode in season one, Secret Sex, which I believe we've done, that is all about this concept.
Yeah.
Like, Harry is Charlotte's secret sex, but it's the best sex of her life. And she's like, I think I may like him. Which, what's so bad about that?
Yeah, she's being a bitch.
So then we get Charlotte and Harry in bed together in Buddy McDougal's rightful home. That should be Buddy McDougal on that bed. And Harry invites Charlotte to Bitsy's wedding. It's interesting who gets an invite. So I guess it's just Carrie and Samantha. And Miranda doesn't want to be Carrie's plus one at first. Charlotte's not going to go, but is invited because Harry did Bitsy's first divorce.
I love that detail. Also, they're eating pizza on a bed. Also something that Buddy McDougal would never allow in her house.
I'm shocked that Charlotte even allowed that to happen in her house. I mean, Harry's really changing her.
Although, you know, it's a different time because she's blotting the pizza grease on the pizza. I feel like that was such a, like, 90s diet culture thing. Although I suppose maybe it's a little different in New York because some pizzas are like insanely greasy. It's not even about like, oh, I'm trying to shave off some calories. It's like, this is literally wet.
Yeah, you're making me realize that I just did that when I lived in New York. I think because I saw it in television and film so often. I don't even know why I did it.
Yeah, we all did it.
So Harry has a house in Bridge, as he says, because he is the Hamptons, baby.
Who isn't the Hamptons on this episode? This episode actually has the most, like, deep propaganda about the Hamptons because everyone has a house in the Hamptons, even Burger. We'll get into that later.
Absolutely. Where is the end Just Like That episode? There's such reverberations from this episode to that series that I did not even realize, which is, where do we get the weekend episode where Charlotte invites the girls to her Hamptons house? We learned, again, never saw Carrie and Big's Hamptons house. Let us have a Hamptons episode. My God.
Harry agrees to wax his back.
Oh, that's right. That's the only way that she'll be seen with him, which is like, he could just wear a shirt. I mean, why?
I know, like, waxing your back must be so painful.
I mean, nothing is more painful than having your privates waxed, I would think, but sure.
I think your back would be worse. not that I've ever had my back waxed, but it's just like such a large area. How much hair is there in a bikini wax? You know, that's nothing.
These are the moments that I realize that like my father listens to this podcast. So I'm like, do I just say what I want to say, which is like, think about molten hot wax on your inner labia, Chelsea. Yes, it's way more painful.
Babes, I've gotten a bikini wax. I understand what's involved. I'm just saying, I think that would be less painful than getting your full back waxed if you were a man with a hairy back. It would be like some 40-year-old virgin shit.
Your wife who's listening to us record just went, no.
You'd rather have your entire back waxed then get a bikini wax. That's crazy.
I like the idea of us recording, but each of our partners are listening in as sort of a people's court. Anyway, so Charlotte's in because Harry's going to get his back wax, which I think where we started this conversation is just have him wear a shirt. Why does he need to be shirtless in the Hamptons? His chest is still hairy.
I feel like more of the issue is that he should get a spray tan, like a Mr. Big in the first Sex and the City movie spray tan. Shade 3 at Sugared and Bronzed.
I think Chris Noth was doing a shade 4, honestly. All right, anyway, now we have the I couldn't help but wonder.
That night, I thought about what it takes to make a relationship work till death do us part. Most singles have more long-term success with friends, so maybe it is a better strategy to marry a friend. However, in the absence of sex, whether that's the arrangement or just what happens after a few years, what distinguishes this companion from your many other companions? When it comes to saying, I do, is a relationship without the za-za-zoo?
Bobby Fine and Bitsy Von Muffling are reading Carrie's article that week and being like, oh, this is about us. Should we disinvite her to the wedding? Like, do we think this article is dropping after their wedding or before?
I think we should assume before. I do like that in this, I couldn't help but wonder, Carrie is floating the idea of marrying a friend. And now people just fully are marrying their friends. Like, we read articles about it all the time.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely been several New York Times style sections about this. And honestly, Chelsea, if I was single much longer, I would have just pitched a platonic throuple between you, me, and Tat.
So is a relationship without the za-za-zoo?
In theory, I understand what Carrie is trying to say. It is just the worst phrasing ever that I don't want to align myself and be like, yes, a relationship isn't a relationship with the za-za-zoo. But yes, there is something indescribable, so indescribable that the only words that can describe it is something like za-za-zoo, that you feel with someone that, yeah, if you don't have it, I don't think it can be learned.
But it seems like a lot of people are in relationships that don't have za-za-zoo, so clearly it works for them in other ways.
I'm taking in this rewatch za-za-zoo to mean a sexual compatibility, because Carrie juxtaposes this between Bobby Fine and Bitsy Von Muffling's marriage that she assumes is a marriage of convenience. We will later learn in this episode, and certainly in Just Like That, that they had a very healthy sex life.
Carrie and her friends have already accepted that Bobby is gay. Can't they just like look at this as another sort of alternative lifestyle type thing? Like, this is an alternative lifestyle.
Yeah, I was trying to think. I think it's become a little more normalized, but in 2002, this would be quite progressive. But there's a lot unspoken about this. And I think that's Miranda's point of what does she say about Bobby Fine? She just wants him to say that, yeah, the young guys don't go for me anymore. And for Bitsy, it's, hey, I'm looking for some companionship.
Yeah.
Clearly, there's a bit of insanity attached to za-za-zoo, right? Because when it's applied to Samantha, it's that she survived the za-za-zoo. She's a za-za-zoo survivor.
So cut to the scene referenced by that dear caller where Samantha calls Richard asking to stay at his place in the Hamptons or throw a party at his place in the Hamptons.
I've been thinking, our pathetic relationship is as close to marriage as either one of us ever hopes to get. So I feel I deserve some sort of settlement. Like, say, a weekend at your house in the Hamptons? You're not invited. I'll be having a party. You're not invited to that either. Oh, it's Samantha. Call me.
She doesn't ask him. She tells him.
I like that he agrees.
We assume something happens off screen. I don't know. Does he agree or does she just show up to the house?
She had to get the key from someone. But I really, really love this. It's the perfect end to their relationship.
As if Dirty Martini for Dirty Bastard couldn't have gotten better.
So meanwhile at Miranda's, Steve is napping. with baby Brady. He brought some lilacs over, which apparently makes Miranda super horny.
Yeah, I completely forgot that they have sex in this scene. But how could I forget when Carrie's voiceover says, Steve went from X to sex.
Cut to the road trip to the Hamptons.
This Hamptons roadside cafe, there's a lot going on.
Well, Carrie looks insane for one thing. And it's not even just the cowboy hat. It's that shawl that she's wearing.
Oh, not just the handkerchief dress?
It's a lot of things happening. And also, of course, Miranda and Brady have matching hats. Or semi-matching hats. Because little Brady is wearing like a baby fisherman hat. Very Woody Allen. But the brim is like flipped up so it looks more like Miranda's fedora.
Well, that's how you know he's a cool baby.
It's very, very cute. As I recall, this was one of the first photos we posted on the Instagram account back in the day.
Oh, wow. The other thing about Carrie's handkerchief dress is Sarah Jessica Parker is the most pregnant she's ever been in shooting this series. This is not the outfit to hide a pregnancy in. Also, the platform espadrilles, never been a fan of, don't care for it.
I think there's a time and a place, but that time and place is not the early 2000s. Maybe in the 50s or something.
Not in 2024 either. So Miranda does admit to Carrie that she slept with Steve, which is the reason that she has accepted her plus one position to this Bobby Fine wedding.
She's a fucking fugitive.
Although it really does feel like she could have left Brady with Steve and just escaped on her own, but whatever. Samantha's on the hood of their car, someone else's car, organizing this party. A party of which there are no babies.
Yes, in this scene, Samantha basically disinvites Brady, or Shitty Pants, as she calls him.
Which, you know, is so weird because in that third film, he was going to accidentally send her dick pics, right?
Look, I get that you're having a party and that babies shouldn't be allowed, but you have to make an exception for Miranda, as she does not have childcare.
How is this baby going to fuck up the vibe?
So this is the moment where Burger rocks up. We haven't seen him in a minute.
The choice to make him an accidental motorcycle enthusiast is interesting, and it does carry over into the next season.
He has a place in the Hamptons.
How successful was his first book? In the way that Sex and the City made New York real estate seem very attainable in a way that it very much wasn't, the show 10 times fold makes it seem like everyone just has a house in the Hamptons.
Yeah, also Berger is much more of a Hudson Valley type person.
Yeah, upstate bro.
Like, I don't think he would like the culture in the Hamptons.
None of this makes sense. To be fair, it could be a garden shack. We don't know.
He's terrified to buy a Prada shirt, but he has a house in the Hamptons.
Oh, it absolutely makes no sense once it's extended into the next season, where he's a struggling writer who still won't sell his motorcycle
or his Hamptons house.
I'm going to assume that between episodes, he sold his Hamptons house.
He lives in like a studio apartment, yet owns a house in the Hamptons.
We have a lot of questions, clearly, but Carrie has few questions because all she needs to know is that Burger is single, or as she says it, Burger with a side of single.
Meanwhile, at Richard's house, Samantha is preparing for the party. She is wearing one of the most iconic outfits ever, I would say. I don't know who made the dress, but some slinky teal dress in this massive Chanel headscarf.
It's an inspired choice, but Samantha's vibe is ruined when three, what do we want to call them, cocoa butter bitches show up?
Yeah. Bridge and tunnel girls.
Given the episode where Samantha engineers the threesome for Richard's birthday, do we think these are the type of girls that Richard would have sex with? Or did he hire these women to ruin Samantha's party? That makes a lot more sense than these women frequent Richard's Hamptons house, I think.
Yeah, they are a weird vibe. They should be like demonic sugar babies.
Right, that all look vaguely Eastern European or something.
Yeah.
These women look like the women that showed up at the bar where Carrie and Samantha smoke weed and almost get in a fight with.
Oh, absolutely.
Spoiler alert, Miranda's baby does show up, but the baby is wearing Ralph Lauren, which I think should count for something. I'm with Miranda on this one.
And she put a cork up his ass, apparently. Can you do that to a baby?
I mean, we'd barely do that to our dogs. I doubt we would do this to a child. But I really don't think at this point Samantha has a leg to stand on as soon as Miranda sees those cocoa butter bitches taking off their bikinis and sunbathing. Also, these are some of the worst breast implants I've ever seen.
Yeah, what was the casting call like? Do you have implants from the late 80s?
I feel like 1996 to 2004 era breast implants, like the aesthetics of that were maybe the worst that have ever happened.
Yeah, they were always like very hard. But I love the reversal of when Samantha says, this is supposed to be an A-list party. And Carrie says, who's the double D-list by the pool?
Look, there's some bad Carrie puns. This was a good Carrie pun.
Very, very well-crafted joke.
So Harry and Charlotte are there together at this party. He takes off his shirt, which is not a Hawaiian shirt, Chelsea. It's tiki, which I agree with Harry. And he was unaware until this moment that he had a horrific reaction to his back getting waxed. It looks like he has the level of back knee that bodybuilders get when they're juicing. Do you know that that happens to guys?
No,
they get terrible back knee.
That's so gross.
So evidently, I didn't go through my DVDs. I watched this on Max.
What was that, in a Steve accent?
That's just how I say Max. I feel like that's how it should be said. It
sounds like Steve saying Ma, though.
As we know, I have three impressions and I just cycle through them. But I remember that there is a deleted scene in this episode where Trey is actually at this party and sees Charlotte.
Oh, wow. I've never seen that. What does he say?
If you're about to hear the scene that I was able to rip it and we've put it in this episode, if not, oops.
Well, this is quite a surprise.
Hi. Yes, yes, it is.
How you doing? Harry Goldenblatt, I handled your divorce.
Oh, that's a fine how do you do.
Charlotte, honey, could you put a little sunscreen on my back?
I was pretty turned off when Harry screamed greetings from Silicon Valley at these random topless girls.
It's a funny joke, but not something to be shouted across the pool.
That's something you say quietly to your girlfriend.
Which he's able to later do during the wedding. So this is where it's Stanford, Carrie, Bobby Fine, and Bitsy rolls up. Bitsy Von Muffling tells Carrie, she goes, woman to woman, the sex is amazing. I've never had a man make me feel this way. A bit TMI for a person you just met. Feels like she's overcompensating. But again, we later learn she's telling the truth.
Yes, but Carrie is famously a sex columnist. It's not like she's just telling a random person this. It's literally part of her job.
And per my side theory that Carrie has already published an article about them, maybe Bitsy read it and was like, she's got to know that the sex is great. Put it in next week's column.
Yeah, what did Gypsy Rose Blanchard say? The D is fire.
Yes.
Then Stanford and Marcus arrive. This is so funny.
Yes, when Bobby Fine begins to grate Marcus's abs.
Yeah, he pantomimes grating cheese on his abs.
And says, please put a shirt on before I marry you. Which it's like, okay, wait, is he a bisexual king? Like, what are we going with here? What's the narrative? I think everyone at this wedding is like, just explain the narrative and we'll go with you.
They walk away and, of course, everyone talks shit about them yet again. And Carrie is like, what is she doing? And Marcus very earnestly says, maybe he just makes her laugh.
And guess what? That shuts up everyone right quick.
That's like his one dramatic line.
You know what? Marcus was too pure for this world, for these cynical bitches. He had to get out. To go back to the Zaza Zoo of it all, I think I would trade the Zaza Zoo for someone who could make me laugh.
Yes, humor is so important to me.
It'd be great to have it all, right? Companionship, sexual compatibility, and someone who makes you laugh. But if I can only have two.
No, totally.
So Berger shows up at this party because evidently Richard Wright has such an iconic house that even Berger has heard of it. And he's like, don't need the address. I know where it is.
She unloads on him about the Aiden breakup. This is so awkward, but Carrie's actually so ahead of her time. Now we exist in a culture of oversharing. She was really just like forging that path back in the early 2000s.
All of season 5, Carrie is off of her game and, as she calls it, emotionally slutty, because there's that the first episode of season 5 where she's trying to have a meet cute moment with that guy under the apartment awning when it's pouring rain, and he's not having it, and she just immediately, as a joke but like kind of seriously, is like, let's get married.
That's such a good moment. We did talk about that episode. We did that one.
Guys, we can't remember which episodes we've done and which ones we haven't.
We did that one. But yes, she's definitely having a hair crisis, and that's especially evident at Bobby Fine and Bitsy's wedding, but we'll get into that in a bit.
The short hair. I mean, the hours that...
I meant the flat ironed hair.
No, I understand that. But just the short hair in general, the amount of styling that it took to have her hair look like that in every episode. Yeah. Carrie just doesn't have the time. This is embarrassing. It's very difficult to watch, but it's one of the few moments where Carrie is actually incredibly self-aware. Right? She says, after every breakup, I tell myself I'm not doing this again. It's too hard. I mean, how many of these things can one person survive? Because she's Carrie. She makes a pun about motorcycle helmets and how there should be a helmet law for relationships.
And then Berger's like, peace, bitch. I'm out of here.
He doesn't just freak out. I forgot this detail that pre-scene that we see, he must have given his jacket for Carrie to sit on so she doesn't, you know, get grass stains. And he violently rips it out from under her.
And then kind of falls off his bike as he's trying to drive away, because it's also been established that he can barely drive this motorcycle.
If Berger freaked out this much from the little that she said, like, thank God she didn't tell him that they were engaged and it's a broken engagement. Yeah. But I also wonder, if I saw a guy, well, one, having that reaction to me, but two, followed by him badly peeling out on his motorcycle, why doesn't she get the ick?
Yeah, I would definitely get the ick. So back at the party, Samantha is going through it a little bit. She asked Carrie, do you think Richard slept with any of those cocoa butter bitches? To which Carrie responds, no, I'm sure they're just good friends. Great delivery on Sarah Jessica Parker's part.
I'm going to live in denial with Samantha. I think Richard hired these women to psychologically torture Samantha. I do not think he had sex with them.
Inside the house, they're looking for Tab in the refrigerator.
Didn't know they were still making that in 2002, but all right.
Yeah, also they ask Samantha if she's seen any Rice Krispies treats, because Richard usually leaves those around for us.
I think this is all lies. I think this was a well-crafted script that his sexy for sexy assistant wrote for them to say to slowly drive Samantha crazy. I forget what the run-up is to the exchange about the breast implants and the cantaloupe.
Oh, it's something like, you're just jealous of us.
Samantha goes, yeah, I'm jealous. I'm just dying to look like this. And she takes two giant cantaloupes to pantomime this woman's terrible breast implants, which there's nothing worse than delivering a cutting insult to someone and they just laugh at you instead. Like, it does. This woman absorbs none of that insult and is like, I don't know, maybe if you did, you'd be out here with Richard. And she's got two people to back her up. Samantha's got no one. She doesn't have Carrie to, like, back her up, you know, deliver a searing pun or something.
So she has no choice but to just hurl the cantaloupe through the plate glass door.
As Carrie's voiceover says, evidently people who borrow glass houses shouldn't throw cantaloupes.
So funny.
Now, do we think Samantha left the window, door, whatever it is, like that? Or do you think she paid to fix it before she vacated the premises?
I'm sure she made Richard's house manager aware of the situation and offered to reimburse for any expenses.
I like to think that she left another message where she was like, you know what? Another thing that I deserve from this relationship is to not have to pay to replace a $20,000 glass door. Anyway, Samantha, call me.
So cut to Miranda and Carrie eating at Stanny and Marcus's house.
Another couple that has a Hamptons home.
Okay, I thought we established that Stanford is an underemployed talent manager
who has money from his grandmother, but I thought he only got that money if he married a woman.
Yeah, we don't know if he ever actually got that. Stanny is the kind of person that would have some, like, rich, straight female friend that has a Hamptons place.
Oh, absolutely.
He wouldn't have his own Hamptons house. Not saying he doesn't deserve it. I'm just saying, like, this is also not a realistic person that would have a Hamptons house.
The only new money people that have Hamptons homes is someone like Bethany Frankel, who was on a reality show, started Skinny Girl Margarita, sold it for hundreds of millions of dollars, and immediately started buying Hamptons real estate.
Also, I feel like they'd want a house on Fire Island or something.
Oh, absolutely.
Or Provincetown. This doesn't make sense. But anyway, they have a fabulous house. They have fabulous flatware, which we'll get into in a moment.
This Zaza Zoo, as the episode goes on, is really a get-out-of-jail-free card because Carrie's like, that wasn't me talking to Burger. It was the Zaza Zoo talking.
I was possessed by an evil demon force.
I need Carrie to get arrested for some petty crime on And Just Like That, and she goes with the Zaza Zoo defense.
Potential And Just Like That plot line. Carrie gets really depressed again and starts shoplifting.
Ooh.
Just for the thrill of it, kind of like Sigourney Weaver in the Ice Storm.
At the newly reopened Century 21.
It's too hard to shoplift there. They already had sensors on everything.
I guess the inspirational tale that Carrie is taking from Bitsy Von Muffling and Bobby Fine's wedding is that we should all just stop looking for a great relationship and settle for a fine one.
Or just like marry a gay guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what she's saying. But it's like she's making it seem like that is a step down or something. Like clearly these two people are happy with each other and happy with their decision. Like, all of you are just bitter bitches.
Yeah. So Carrie's like, Stanny, I have to hand it to you. You've actually found love. You've figured it out. You have this Hamptons house. You have a wonderful relationship. And then Stanny discloses that him and Marcus have not had sex since they bought the Cynthia Rowley china.
Which brings Carrie much relief. Basically, like a minute prior to her having this conversation, her and Miranda are like, maybe we should just marry gay guys. Like, Miranda's even like, if Steve were gay, I would marry him, which...
Well, it's like, you're gay, yeah. And you're marrying him.
Through the And Just Like That prism, that line is especially funny now.
I love how honest Carrie's response is, but it's also so mean. Also, I had to Google Cynthia Rowley China, and it does exist. I thought it was kind of a weird choice of brand for Stanford, though, and I always have. He seems like a very Jonathan Adler person. I don't know if he made plates then, but I feel like Stanford is very, like, would love a Jonathan Adler, like, fringe sofa or, like, a giant ceramic banana or something.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's now a Shinto monk, so he's...
He's renounced all of his Jonathan Adler bananas.
All his earthly home decor, but yeah.
Anyway.
The sexual politics of this episode is wild. The line that Carrie has where she's like, a gay area is better than a gray area. It's like, what are you talking about?
Okay, so cut to the wedding.
Very classy affair.
Bobby is doing his vows. He says, Bitsy, from the first time I saw you, I fell in love. You walked in wearing that red vintage Dior. I think this is romantic, personally.
Yeah, I mean, this would work for wedding vows for us, but it does prompt Miranda to go pink elephant in the room, of which Stanford then goes, do you mind? I'm listening to the bride and the brides.
Can you imagine people talking shit like that at your own wedding?
Truly my nightmare. Someone else chimes in. Something tells me Bitsy isn't doing fine. I think that's Samantha. And then that prompts Harry to jump in and say, and that's the little piece of information she's been Von Muffling. And I'm sorry. It feels like as soon as Harry did that line, the ladies immediately fucked with him. Like, I found that micro moment so heartwarming, but maybe it just reminded me of like how Paul has so seamlessly integrated with you guys and how it's the best feeling.
It's always a relief when someone's boyfriend can integrate into the friend group. And yeah, they love that Harry is a catty little bitch that's willing to talk shit and make Carrie Bradshaw-esque puns.
Yeah, it is unfortunate that they're doing this at other people's expenses. Bitsy Von Muffling does her vows.
You are there for me in the morning, there for me at night, there in the good, there in the bad, there in my thoughts, there in my dreams. But most of all, my darling, you are there in my heart. Forever.
While watching it, I was like, should I steal these vows as my own? Like, would anyone notice?
I would definitely notice.
You'd stop the ceremony. You're like, no, these two should marry each other. But I just want it to be known. She is reciting Bitsy Von Muffling's wedding vows from the episode I Love a Charade.
And Paul's like, ever thine, ever mine, ever ours. So we need to talk about Carrie's hair.
This 60s bouffant, which would have worked way better when she accompanied Stanford to his gay prom the next season.
It's a shocking hairstyle. And we always know that, like, when Carrie's hair is flat ironed, like, something is going on with her. Hence the post-engagement Aiden era.
I don't know. I think Sarah Jessica Parker just wanted a different look, but this is not it.
Yeah, this is definitely not it.
There's a brief moment where Miranda smells a lilac, and so she's reminded of Steve and calls him, and it goes to message, I imagine because he's a bartender and it's clearly a Friday or Saturday night. And instead of leaving a message, she's like, no matter, whatever. We'll deal with this next season when I immediately realize I'm in love with this man.
And she like throws away the piece of lilac, but then Brady grabs it again. And it's like, aw, he wants them to be a family. So cute.
And then Bobby goes up to Carrie. They exchange words, but it ends with him saying, there's my song and there's my girl, whom I love, in case you had any money riding on it. And Carrie goes, not a penny. And it's like, okay, yeah, you weren't taking bets about their marriage, but you've been talking relentless shit that has ended up in your column, Carrie.
And you were talking shit during the ceremony, like a mere minutes ago.
He whispers in her ear, it's like, I heard what you said, bitch.
No, it's sad. It's like he knows that everyone is talking shit. He's addressing the pink elephant in the room.
A pink suede elephant, excuse you?
Right. Harry asks Charlotte to dance and drops a bombshell.
That he can only marry a Jewish woman.
And then Carrie says, apparently Charlotte had a Zaza Jew.
Okay. Well, I mean, again, like, this whole exchange is wild. Because Carrie goes, she, referring to Bitsy Von Muffling, can marry a gay guy, but you can't marry an Episcopalian. And it's like, okay, well, Bitsy Von Muffling wants to marry a gay guy. He does not want to marry an Episcopalian. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, look, I get that religious compatibility is important for a lot of people, but like, Harry eats pork. I feel like you have to really commit before you ask someone else to convert.
Well, they do get into this in the following season. I also forgot that Berger shows up in this episode and claims that Bobby Fine invited him to the wedding, which I hope is a lie, or else, like, what is Berger's life that he has money for a Hamptons house? He somehow also knows Bobby Fine, but only showed up during the reception?
I don't question the reality of this. He had a nice little stop and chat with him at a coffee shop or something. And Bobby, overwhelmed with joy, was like, you should come to my wedding.
But only the reception. Berger shows up because he did some thinking and he thought, even though what Carrie did divulge did give him the ick, he thought, maybe we should go out on a date before we break up. And all I could think was, no. Berger's first instinct was correct. Fleeing on a motorcycle is the right reaction to a relationship with Carrie. You guys aren't good. You'll never be good.
Yeah, and you're disparate financial situations are about to unravel this relationship that you have.
And your terrible sexual chemistry.
Right, that too. Yeah, nothing happening here.
So the episode ends with a Carrie voiceover. She says, when it comes to relationships, maybe we're all in glass houses and shouldn't throw stones. I mean, true, correct. Because you can never really know. Some people are settling down, some people are settling, and some people refuse to settle for anything less than butterflies.
Cut to an actual butterfly. This is truly a Sex in the City ending like no other.
As far as season finales go, this is pretty strong, especially for how weak this season was.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she can't help but shit on Bobby and Bitsy's marriage because she goes, well, some people are settling, which is clearly about them. It's like, fuck you. They're happy.
Well, when any couple gets married, it triggers someone for some reason, whether that's like a close friend or a casual acquaintance or a frenemy.
Or a satellite friend.
Yeah, exactly.
And Carrie is just someone who's not going to settle for anything less but for Mr. Big to come back into her life, only for him to leave her at the altar. Again, that's the scene I wanted in Sex and the City 1. It's like just a cut to Natasha reading that they didn't end up getting married, Bobby Fine and Bitsy reading that, Aiden and Kathy reading it.
Yeah, they're all reading the page 6 article.
Anyway, how many Manolos are we giving this?
I can't decide. Is it a 7 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10?
No, it's definitely a 7. It's not as high as an 8. I was more thinking like, is it a 6.5 or a 7?
I think it's a 7 out of 10 because we get Nathan Lane, one of the best Sex and the City guest stars of all time. We have the melon scene. one of Samantha's greatest moments and some of Samantha's greatest outfits also.
I think a solid 7 Manolos.
But on the downside, too much burger and Carrie's hair crisis.
And the introduction of the Zazazoo. All right, 7 Manolos, very solid.
All right, well, that's enough Von Muffling for today. We gotta call it.
After that very fine episode, it's time to go.
Yeah, we must retire. But thank you guys for listening. We will be back next week.
All right, guys, bye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.